Duck South Studios in Oxford, Mississippi.
We're mass communicating.
It's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off for them.
This is the End of the Line podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com.
I gave it a 10.
Sweep the leg. You have a problem with that.
And now, here are your hosts, Rocky LaFleur.
Everybody on? Good.
Great. Grand. Wonderful.
No yelling on the bus.
Josh Webb.
Sorry I had a fight familiar, your butt at the party.
And Jake Latondras.
I am bad news.
Also starring Rob Kroon.
I bet this guy's into the woods $100.
And Bradley Ramsey.
No, Mark, didn't say it.
Showtime.
All right, here we go. Hold your ears, folks. It's showtime.
Showtime, everybody! Showtime!
Welcome to the End of the Line podcast. I'm Rocky LaFleur, sitting in the Duck South Studios on this... Well, it's Tuesday, but you're listening to this on Wednesday. Duck South Studios in Oxford, Mississippi. Joining me on the other end of the line, Bill Cooksey, Jeff Oles. Guys, how are y'all?
Doing good, great. Man. How you doing?
I am doing awesome.
I'm just sitting up here in Illinois waiting for a turkey to start gobbling so we can kill one next week.
Well, it seems like every household, you got Bill's house is dealing with pneumonia, and you got Jeff, your house, dealing with food poisoning. Jeez.
Yeah.
Glad mine's healthy.
Yeah. Yeah. I went to Nashville last weekend for Supercross races and, had a blast for one day until, boy, a couple feet food poison down there. That's not good. That's a near-death experience, but I've had a lot of those, so I'm I'll survive this one.
Yeah. But you've had some interesting ones, Jeff. I mean, didn't what was it you got years ago? You were down here for a show when you'd just gotten over something from a mosquito-borne. West
yeah,
Nile.
I got over that. I had that deal. It was real bad. I'm not complaining or nothing. I'm just thank God I'm alive. But I had that. It was real bad. I had I got bit by varicose spiders that were in my waders, and like that deal like to kill me. And but probably the worst thing I have to in 1993. I was iron working, and it was one of those 110 heat index days. And long story short, I had a heat stroke, and not heat exhaustion, it was a stroke. And they got me an ambulance, and they'd called in and said, I just read this in a report. And long story short, I died on the table, and they tubated me in a helicopter and got me back to life. And I was off for three quarters of the year and had to even learn how to put blocks back into holes and all kind of stuff to, you know. Because it's a way worse thing than most people know, and I come out of that and survived that. So yeah, I've been pretty lucky. So
wow.
I guess the good Lord wasn't ready for me yet. Send him back,
hey, Jeff. Jeff, that West Nile. My father-in-law had that. Man, he still has long-term effects now. It's been 18 years ago, and he still has effects. Can't donate blood, anything.
Yeah, basically what mine was, mine was the tick thing. It was from the tick.
Oh, tick.
Yeah, just a tick, and it was bad, it was brutal. And that thing, it was terrible. But I survived it and got past it and all. And yeah, you have effects from it, you know, but now I'm okay now. I had effects for a long time. I think the heat stroke probably messed me up worse than anything. But it's like anything, you know, God made us a pretty good healing body, and so... If he wants you healed, he'll heal you. So he's healed me up pretty good. So,
well, last week when we left the story, kind of sitting on top of the world. You just started the straight meat videos.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I want to ask you this: as you're setting your image, you're kind of setting an image for yourself, a brand. Out, you know, brand wasn't the word used back then, 2004, right. 5, somewhere in there. But you had this image that you portrayed. Mm. And you became a hero to a lot of people.
What?
How did you go about setting that image or brand for yourself?
Well, I always said that it's it's kind of like doing seminars. If you're a great seminar speaker, is a guy that just beats himself and knows what he's doing. If you have to study something for a seminar or something like that, you can't make it. You know, I never. If you know something, and that's just who you are, it's pretty easy to do. And that's all I was. That was just, I didn't really, in all honesty, I didn't portray anybody. I was just myself. That's just who I am, who I was. I didn't change anything.
But you had to see big positives. Yeah, all right, well, this is a big positive, but this is a slight negative. I may need to adjust that a little bit.
Yeah, and that might have been my problem. I didn't adjust too much. I didn't adjust a whole lot. And the reason being is, and I guess what I'm getting at, I mean, I was raised, you know, I cut my teeth on that, you know. I mean, that's how we were, you know. We were hardcore hunters, and not that everybody else isn't, but it was just hardcore, and that's just who we were, you know. I mean, I just, you know, there was just, I just, you know, I mean, Bill gets a kick out of this, a face paint thing. Anyway, that's just, I wore face paint as long as I ever can remember. We had something, you know, hiding our face or whatever, you know, and the beards and whatever, you know, and I never had to have much of that, but the camo, as much camo as you get, and, you know, I mean, I was just in, just hardcore after, you know. Bottom line is, I love hunting, and I ain't gonna lie to you, I love killing them, you know, and I always said, I get a kick out of these guys you know, they said, oh, you're all about the killing. Well, if you're not about the killing, when you go hunting, why don't you leave your gun home? Then just go watch them, be a bird watcher, you know. And they say,
amen.
Well, I had just as much fun, and I have to. I've had a blast on a lot of bad hunts where we didn't kill anything. I've had a blast in there. But I also, and anybody, I think anybody says anything different generally is a liar, but you always have a great time when you all kill your limit. And so we all go out there, and that's our goal. That's your goal. When you leave the house, you want to have that great day where you kill your limit, and they're all slapping and high-fiving and blood on your hands, and the dog's got blood on his face, and you got all kind of birds to kill and clean and all. I mean, that's the days we all look for. So, yeah, I love that part, you know. So I basically was just being me, if you want to know the truth about it.
But Jeff, believe it or not, and some people might be interested in this, but with you and Phil Robertson, two high-profile guys, kind of being out there with face paint more than anyone had been in the past, mm-hmm. and it became a thing. It actually became almost a thing to not wear face paint. When I realized that was happening was when a photographer showed up to do a photo shoot with me and a bunch of Avery guys years ago. And I guess this was about 07, 08. And he said, hey, do y'all have face paint? Actually, he said, you guys have face paint because those photos sell great.
Mm-hmm.
No, we're the non-face paint people. Yeah, so there's almost another, it's interesting, I find it interesting, we find our own ways and it becomes a thing, where it wasn't a thing when you did it, or me not wearing face paint, it wasn't a thing, I just didn't, and you did, it became a big deal, and the rock and roll, I'm a country guy, you know, don't get mm-hmm. me wrong, I was at the, mm-hmm. I watched Guns N' Roses opened to the Rolling Stones in the Hollywood Dome in 1989, but
mm-hmm. good
nowadays,
for you, man.
Nowadays I'm chill country, so not the hard driving thing. But you took that the rock and roll and hard driving deal, and it probably furthered that mystique of, is the guy pushing the envelope, But you say it's your personality, but how did you really get there? Because it was pushing it much further than other people had in that regard.
Well, we'll start off with the face paint thing. This is my take on it. Bill, can me and you and Rocky go out and kill a limited ducks, and we're in a good spot and all that, and we're good enough hunters to hide our face and kill ducks with it? Yeah, we can all do that. We can all do that. But here's always been my take on this. I don't like, number one, I'm turkey hunting. I do wear a mask. I don't hate mask. I don't like that. I don't like to be, it's hard to call. It's hard to do all that with a mask on.
Mm-hmm.
But I look at it like this. We go out there, build a duck blind, brush the thing up. You got the best camouflage in the world. You can buy anything from camouflage tennis shoes to camouflage underwear. You can even buy negligee camouflage for your wife if you want to. You can have head to toe the best camouflage. And you've been involved in making some, designing this kind of camouflage.
It's sure.
Height different, everything. And we do all that. What's the one thing that's sticking out looking at the duck? Or your critter, your face.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and I'm sorry. We're all, you know, not all of us. I got some good, you know, some of my best friends don't have a white face. But we do. So, and I've looked across in these state areas at hunters before and seen those shining gun barrels and those, and that face paint or shining faces and all that. I don't want that. I want to kill these things. And so I put face paint on. So I used to put it on when the only thing was that old, oh gosh, I ain't gonna say the brand of it, but man, you used to put it on almost had to have a grinder to take it off. You know, but I mean, it used to be horrible. And
yeah.
I had all that stuff. I put blood on my face and then whatever. And the reason being for it, I'm not trying to be anybody special. I just wanted to hide from them, you know.
Right.
Now, I make a boat blind. It's got a camouflage netting thing on the front of it, and you saw it. I brought it down and showed to Matthews one time. And anyway, I never wore it in there because I didn't have to. But
mm-hmm.
you know, I figure if I'm the guy calling, I'm walking around, my face is moving and all that, I want face paint on. So that's why mm-hmm. I want face paint. Now the rock and roll part of it, I started playing drums when I was fourth grade, and I was a rock and roller. And by sixth grade, we had a little band going. And I played in a lot of rock bands and all that. And I still, to this day, have a big set of drums and I play in a praise group at church with. And the more contemporary rock music they play, the better I like it. And if you hopped in the truck with me, I'd probably drive you crazy because I'll have AC/DC, Nickelback, something crashing on that thing there, you know. And what did I do in Nashville last weekend? That's where I was at. I was at Kid Rock's deal listening to that kind of music. So anyway, long story short, that's just who I am. I like that. Pounding,
sure.
Rock and roll, and as a drummer, you hold the beat to everything. So with that, I always used to, and this is no good not guiding, when you said Guns N' Roses, you know the song "Welcome to the Jungle." I used to play that. I had that cassette tape in my truck, and the hunters would be out there when we were putting decoys out. I would crank that thing up and get them hunters all pumped. I'd go, "Welcome to the jungle, boys." And they were jacked up, ready to go. So wasn't I. So there's where the rock and roll came. And then with, like I said, with the being a drummer like that, when we would make a video, I wanted to do a promo. And so, and I made the first one, just the first promo by, I needed to take and show Realtree something. So I made something. So then we started doing one every year. And now we have all those clips put onto two different videos called Rock On, and it's just rock music with all the killing it. So I would sit there. Do you remember a guy named Steve Panarone?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. Steve and I are great buddies, and Steve's about the closest thing to an Italian mafia guy there is. He's hilarious, but he's a killer. He is a total killer and loves rock. So I would sit out there. I'd fly to Connecticut, and we would sit there for 3 days editing, and I would drive him nuts because I wanted the kills to go to the beat of the music. So we would sit there and get that. So if you're watching him, that's kind of how it is, and that's where this all came from. Now, the first one I put in, when I saw the reaction, or I would take one of these promos to a show and plug it in, and I'd crank that music up, and I had external speakers hooked all of my tents so it would be louder. And I'd sit over there and we'd crank this up and I'd just sit there and watch while I'm selling stuff. And the kids would just come pouring into it. Loved it. So does it appeal to everybody? No. Does a Corvette appeal to everybody? No. A lot of people don't like them. Wouldn't drive one. But I'd say the majority does. You know, so you're trying to get to that certain bunch. And the other part of that is that crew that liked that stuff is the age group that buys stuff. And I ain't gonna lie about it. It's marketing. So I'm not trying to appeal, and don't take this personally, but I'm not trying to appeal to Bill Cooksey, because Bill Cooksey has already got everything he needs. You know what I'm saying? You're not going to buy another duck call. You're not going to buy this here. You follow where I'm going. It was a marketing to those kids there, you know. So the video thing, and that's where I think everybody was so mistaken over the video thing. We loved doing it and all that. And, oh, man, Foles made all these money on videos. Well, you know well as I do, that is not where the money's at. If you take up 5 months of traveling, this is – and everything that goes into that and what little you make on it doesn't pay for anything. You use that for a marketing tool to sell your products. You know,
you figured that out before most anybody.
Well, that was my first, that was the reason I did it. You know, that was the first reason, that was the only reason I did it. And so, is to market my products, you know, and it didn't take long to see that it worked. I thought, okay, we got to get this bigger and better, you know. So that's why we were just so hard driven for 5 months out of the year to do it, you know. But yeah, so there was kind of your answer to the whole. But it was basically, if I would have had to try to portray a character or act that, I'm not a good actor. I could have never done it. It was just me, you know. I mean, I couldn't have been that person, you know. I couldn't be. If I had to go try to portray you, I couldn't. Or you, me. You know what I'm saying? I just couldn't.
Sure.
I'm just trying to be successful with it. You just got to be yourself. And if you've got it, if the people like that style, they do. If they don't, they don't, you know. So yeah, I mean.
Hey, Jim, I've got one that I've always wondered. Being involved in being a guide for 22 years, being online, all these forums for all these years. Look, if you drew a line from Texas and you took that line up through Oklahoma, Oklahoma-Arkansas border, across the Bootheel of Missouri, across Kentucky, and across back down to Georgia, through Tennessee, back down to Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
If you were north of that line, north and west of that line, Jeff Foles was the greatest hero ever created for waterfowling. Ever.
You're giving me a lot of credit.
But besides Tim Grounds, Jeff Foles was that guy. Now.
And the only reason I did it, go ahead.
You go south or east of that line, you were either a hero or a villain.
Right, exactly. You're exactly right. Yeah.
Did it? God, don't take me the wrong way. Did you ever just not give a damn about? Did you come to a point? Listen, I'm not going to appease these people from the south. Screw them. Is that the best way to put that question?
I had
no opinion of you back then. I'm not saying anything, but I remember reading things. I'm like, what? You don't even know this guy. Why do you hate him? Who cares if he paints his face? Who cares if he likes rock and roll?
When you get, my best friends in the world are in your area, and I love that down there. I love it all. But
Jeff, hold on. I want people to understand this. This is not Jeff Foles of today speaking. We're talking in his mind back then how he thought back then. We're not talking Jeff Foles today. I'm asking you from 15 years ago your thoughts on your give a damn button.
We're going to go back to the marketing aspect of it. So back then, and even before I was in this business, I went down to South Carolina waterfowl camp down there, Camp Woody, they call it. You guys familiar with that?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know how big it is today, but it used to be really big, and I went there for years. And when I first started in the business, that was when I first started. And, man, I learned real fast down there. Start with, it was hard. The number one thing is hardly any Canadian geese goose hunters down there. It was mostly duck hunters. And so anyway, I went down there, sold a lot of stuff, met a lot of great people down there, and boy, I found it real fast. I'm stepping on some toes down here that, you know, I met some great people, you know, down there. And I thought, and it was just great people, but I thought, man, I don't know, you know, if this is the market. So anyway, the bottom line of this, it was everything had to do with marketing. The farther north you went down, that's where they're killing the majority of the Canadian geese. So I had to stay in my core area. Now, I sell a lot of duck calls, probably way, way more than most people even realize that we do. But I'm going to say that most of those duck calls that we sell are sold, and now it's even bigger. You know, we sell them all over, and we sell a lot down there. I think we sold one to a guy in Texas yesterday. But our guys that even bought the duck calls were goose hunters from northern part of the area. I had to get to the Canadian geese because that was the bread and butter. That, you know, goose calls was bread and my bread and butter. That was my everything. You know, I sold way more goose calls than anything. And there was more money in the goose calls. We talked earlier in this deal, you know. But that was where we were at, you know. And that's where, by the time, and then we got to realize this here, by the time I would start in Canada and work my way down, and then I would start going east and west, and maybe I'd get a chance to go to Oklahoma and kill geese down there, and maybe I would, you know, get to Kansas and do that. But most of the time, I was headed west towards Colorado or out west somewhere killing geese out there, and ducks also. But the majority was geese, so that's where most of that went. And so when I would go to a show, and don't get me wrong, I went to a lot of them in the South. Bill probably remembers a lot of them. And absolutely. I went to several of them down there. But it wasn't the selling place, you know. If I had a choice between, you know, money-wise, you had to look, this is a business. This is how you make your livelihood. You know, I don't think people realize that. You know, they think it's all fun, whatever. But the bottom line is, when Joe Blow down the street goes on his construction job like I did forever, that's your job. That's how you make your living. This is how I'm making my living. So now I got to go where the money is, you know. So I'm not going to go. They're not going to go up north if there's no construction. We're going to stay south. So I had to go. If there was a show in Minnesota, which has always been my best state, if I went to a show in Minnesota or a show in, say, Louisiana, after doing a couple of them, I'm probably going to go up there. And the reason being is, if I go to the state of Louisiana, like, you know, Bass Pro, we've seen the Bass Pro forever. When they started the one in Louisiana, I don't even know if they bought a goose call. They bought a lot of duck calls, but I don't know if they bought one. Now, when you get down and you got to know, Bill will tell you this, you got to know your territory. And the bottom line is, and these guys are all great, when you hit that Arkansas line down there, man, the duck call competition's tough, real tough, especially when a northern boy comes down. So you knew your boundaries, you know what I'm saying? So you kind of knew where you're at, you know, so it wasn't anything against that, you know. I always said I want the guy that don't like me's money and the guy that does too. But it was a marketing aspect or whatever, you know. And don't get me wrong, I have got some of my best customers in the South. Some of my very best ones are in the South. But a lot of those are travelers who's traveling or guys in Texas, Oklahoma, killing geese and, you know, all that stuff. So that was kind of the answer to that, you know.
You said a lot with the Canada goose deal, because it's a cultural divide. And it got bigger, at least in my part of the world, in the late 90s and early 2000s when West Tennessee and West Kentucky lost all our geese.
Right.
But, you know, and that was a weird time frame when Ron was coming out with ground blinds and suddenly they were in closed trailers. I remember Zink early in our working together saying, man, we need some huge stickers. I'm like, what the hell for? Mm-hmm. He said, for decoy trailers. I said, dude, what?
What are you talking about? Yeah.
So there's that cultural divide that isn't on purpose by either side. And I'll kind of answer Rocky's question my way. When we were talking about face paint, at some point we kind of made a conscious decision. We could have had half our guys wear face paint for marketing, but now we can't please everybody. This is the way we're going to do it. And
sure.
So you find your avenue and you just have to get over the people who aren't going to like you.
Well, it was like, I'm sure both of you boys know Lee Jost. The people out there, that doesn't. Lee is from Minnesota, and Lee is probably the most number one renowned photographer, graphics guy, you know, in the whole, you know, sporting market. You know, he not only does, you know, he's done all Under Armour, he's done Old Spice, he's done Peak Antifreeze, he's done Benelli, he did mine, Robinson's, he's, you know, on, and I could go on and on.
He belongs in the top three conversation.
Exactly. And when he walks in with his portfolio and his long hair and his long beard and all that there, I mean, people look up to him, you know. But when I started, Lee was doing a lot, but nothing like he is now. And I'm very proud to have him as one of my best friends, and stayed at his house. We've had a blast together. We've had million conversations, but I'd say today he is one of the top leaders, you know, that's ever, you know, walked in this business in that area. And when I went to Lee, and I wanted the best, and you remember those days, the Wildfile days, when, you know, I had a full-page ad and everyone, and I thought, I'm spending every dime I got in marketing, and I don't want so I just called him up and said, I want all year full-page, you know. I think I started out just in like 3 months. And I wanted in every one of them. I want them when they looked at us. I want them. So I started out. I thought, how can I do this? And I remember the first one I did, I had a lot. I was very lucky. I had a lot of ball players, professional ball players on my deal. We had one. It was called, well, I've got that ad somewhere. And it was, you know, we had a diamond, you know, and a home run of waterfowl or something, you know, with all their names and pictures. And I just had a guy do it. And he, an artist, he just drew it up. And it wasn't very good, but that got the start. And then that Ron Latchaw told me about Lee, and I went and found Lee, and he said, I'm not cheap. And I said, I'm not either, but I want the best. And so he said, well, this is what's going to be. And I said, well, this is what's going to be. But I said, the deal is you have to put my calls on everybody and every, I don't care what ad it is, it has to be my Dr. Goose calls on there. I want to be the only one. And so it didn't matter. He does, I would say he does over at least over half the DU covers and deltas and all kinds of stuff. He does a ton of covers for those people. But every cover you've seen, didn't matter what it was, he had my calls on. It was a great advertising thing for us. So I remember going to Lee and I, when I got there, you know, I just wore my camouflage clothes, and he's like, don't do this and wear this and don't do this. No, I said, no, that's not me. He was trying to make me into somebody I wasn't. And I said, look, dude, this ain't me. And we argued, and I walked over and put face paint on, and he's like, what are you doing? You know, this is me. And he just shook his head, and I said, dude, this is me. That's what I want to do. And so, all right, he goes, a big mistake. I want you to put gloves on. I put gloves on one day, and I said, that's the gayest thing I ever seen. That commercial would be with gloves on. I don't want them gloves. I don't wear gloves. That's not me. I'll pick up decoys, I will. I'm in a blind, I don't wear gloves. So anyway, we got where we didn't do that, and finally we got to be this, through a relationship that was unbelievable. And then so that's where that face paint thing kind of came in, you know, and the grunge look and all that. And then he said, look, dude, you are the darkest guy I've ever done. So in, we could be on a perfectly sunny day, and when I got the ad back, it would be, if you, I mean, you've probably seen them all. Everything I got's got clouds behind it. You know, it looks like terrible weather and all, you know, and that was just our look, you know, hardcore, rough as it gets, rough, tough, you know, half shaven, you know, whatever, look at, you know, blood in your eye, look, and maybe even have blood on your hand, you know. I mean, we did a lot to get those, you know, get those photos right, but it was really, there was not a lot of actors in it, you know. It's, once we got all set up, the photo itself wouldn't take minutes. But, yeah, we took that right on into Bigfoot ads and did the whole, and that's when they, you know, Final Approach came out, when we did that whole Final Approach ad that way. So, yeah, it was, so it's been kind of fun, this whole thing, and people don't realize what's behind the scenes to make that happen. But I'll still go back to the beginning of this, you know, and if you just portray yourself and don't try to be somebody, you know, and don't try to be an actor in this business, you can make it, you know. I mean, if you're real enough, you know. So that's like you said, I wasn't I wasn't the clean cut guy that looked clean and had all the new stuff on and did that there. And, you know, I've got a lot of great friends that's that guy. That's not me. That's just not me, who I was. So I didn't want to portray somebody I wasn't, you know.
Hey, Jeff, why do you think in waterfowling, if you aren't a certain way or do certain things, it seems to me turkey hunting and deer hunting aren't as bad as waterfowling. You know, we polarize each other and beat up on each other in waterfowling more than any other sport. Do you agree with that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think bow hunters are pretty bad. If you're, and the only reason I know is I'm going to stay up with bow hunting, but bow hunting's pretty bad. I'm going to say they're pretty close to us, but yeah, we're brutal. We're terrible.
Turkey hunting getting worse.
Yeah, turkey hunting's getting worse about it all the time, too. And it never was, but like Bill said, it is now. But yeah, waterfowlers are bad. I mean, you had to either be one way or the other, you know. And it's now the cool thing is, and I'll give you a I'll give you a quick little scenario here. When all this was going on, back when we're at here now in 2000, 2004, 5, 6, and all this stuff's going on right here, you know, I'm not going to say an arch enemy at all because we weren't enemy, but one of the totally 100% different groups of goose hunters than we were was like Sean Mann and his crew. And Sean's very successful, unbelievable goose hunter, goose call, all the above. But we were total opposites, you know. And Sean, I think, and I think I can tell you right here, he came from the banking business. I come from the construction business. So and we come from two different areas also. So he had a lot more, as a hillbilly turned couth than I did. So his guys, when we go out there, they're a clean cut bunch, you know, and we weren't, you know, so it was a lot. That was one of those deals you're talking about, you know, we were just total. And when we were all with FA on that big photo shoot, we did a photo shoot one time, and I'll never forget, there's a picture of Bill Saunders from the West Coast, myself, and a bunch of guys, John Bach, and a bunch of us there. And then there was Sean Mann and it was just, if you look at that picture, I thought, what a bunch of opposites here, you know, that we all were, you know. It was a bunch of total opposites, you know. The way, you know, there's me with face paint, and Sean's clean cut, you know. And so that caused a lot of friction, you know, back then, like you said, you know, within the waterfowl business. And once we finally jump that hump, it's pretty cool. So we go to Harrisburg to a show. Sean's got a whole different type of booth than I do, but he'd tell his guys, and I'd tell my guy, we'll be back in 2-3 hours. And him and I go, and he's a drummer too, and we go to hit every drum shop out there and buy drums and stuff. So it's cool that you can be opposite and still be buddies, you know. But it took a while to get there. But yeah,
realize is that it created controversy. Especially mm-hmm. in those early internet days,
right.
Created all kinds of controversy where people outside thought everybody hated each other.
And it was
good for business.
Oh, it was good. You know, I tell you, in the marketing business, I've always been told any publicity is publicity. It's advertisement. Any publicity, good or bad. Their name's out there. It's one or two, you know, it's out there. So, and I always kind of went by that. I always tried to do the best, but I wasn't going to come. I'm hard-headed, and I'm stone-headed, and I wasn't coming off of who I was. You know, I just wasn't going to be somebody I wasn't. Like, I'll give you a good example, and this will probably be a lot of haters on this. I got beat up so many times over shooting hens, okay? So here's where I was at with that. Do I want to shoot hens? No. That's not what I'm out there to do. If I can shoot four mallards here, if we can get, you know, eight in Canada, I'll shoot all drakes if that's possible. That's what I'll do. But when you're sitting there with a pile of hunters up there, they're going to get those things. And a lot of this was, there was things that led to this. There was a biologist one time, and do you remember, I don't know if I brought this up before, it was trying to think, is Suzuki's Great Outdoors or something with Larry Zonka, the football player?
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember that show from years
back? I sure do.
Most of these guys, young guys, wouldn't know who Larry Zonka is. But anyway, Larry Zonka.
He was a bad man.
I mean, as bad as it gets, and he was so big, and like we like never got his big head in that blind, kept him in. But great guy. So it was snow, cold, wind blowing, and all this. So Larry came up here, and our guys at Heartland Lodge had called me and said, "Dude, we ain't got no. But what you got us?" So I said, "Man, we're froze up there." Where I went out and beat an ice hole open, got an aerator going. And anyway, long story short, we had one heck of a hunt. So he brought along. Of course, back then the film guys had a camera as big as they are, the old cameras, and all. So it was hard to hide them. But luckily, it was snow blowing. Ducks didn't care. Geese didn't either. And so he brought along a Ducks Unlimited biologist. Well, one of their top biologists was in there. So I'm asking this guy a million questions. So one question I asked this biologist, you could tell this guy was very, very smart guy. You know this. He wasn't just some dumb hillbilly who thought he knew what he was going. He knew. I said, we got to talk about the hen thing. And he got, you guys shoot hens there. I said, actually, the guy that owns this club, he'll charge you $5 if you shoot one. And that was when $5 was like, 50 now, And I said, he will. He charge you $5 if you shoot one. And we had plenty of ducks, so it didn't matter. And he said, why do you do that? And I said, well, I want to save the hens. He said, there is a lot of work goes into deciding how many hens there is. And it comes from biologists deciding, well, he goes to the hunters by killing the limits you got is figured that we'll never hurt the population by doing so. So, and you, I'm sure you're going to agree with me, a lot of it is ethics, of not shooting one. So I went with this. My whole life, what that guy said. Or not my whole life, but I mean, I've went with that poster. But like I said, if I can kill the great. So then I get my own club and all this, and I got these ducks coming out of the refuge day in and day out. When you got 25 mallards coming out of that refuge and coming in your face, what is the first duck that's going to be fluttering in front of you? It's going to be a hen.
Probably a hen mallard. Early.
Exactly. Okay. So you got 15, 20, she's right there fluttering in front of you, and you pick a drake all the way around. They go back in the refuge. They come back out tomorrow or the next day, and they get in there, and they get about 60 yards, and all of a sudden they kind of flare out. You think any of that had to do with any of that? You just gave her a Harvard experience. So I asked another biologist in Illinois about that. He said, shoot them. So I did. So, and also I had pay hunters, so he did. So then I got thinking, they're beating me up pretty good, shoot drakes. And Lee Jost was really on me about this. Because he just shoots drakes. I said, what are you doing in Canada, Lee? You're killing eight up there. They're all brown. You don't know what you're killing. I said, but my big question to everybody that says this, what I want to know about this is, and I've had this, and I am not a hen killer, want to go out and kill hens. That's not what I want to do. But my big question is, how do you pick you're killing hen, you're killing hen geese. So how you picking great geese? You know what I'm saying? It don't bother you.
I've always said that.
Well, you know what I'm saying?
I will throw out. I got to throw this out on the goose thing. Nest predation on geese is nothing. Hen ducks
get
annihilated by predators on the nest. So that,
right.
That's one of the places
it
is.
Yeah, I know. I'm with you. It's very, very hard for a
great caveat in from that biologist from DU, and I think that's where a lot of people get confused. But it's kind of like hunters in general will say, it doesn't matter how many ducks we kill, and biologists have told us that. No, that's not what they told us. They told us within the limits we have set, you're not going
exactly.
to
hunt. Exactly. And in that limit, they're not expecting you to kill 60 days, six ducks a day, 360 ducks a hunter. They're not expecting that.
Exactly.
They've got a percentage of that. That's what everybody's wrong on, Now, I've always said, and I used to tell these game wards that, they didn't like it very good. I said, look, dude, if you give me 360 ducks a year, why does it matter what day I kill them on? If you listen to that biologist, listen to those biologists, that's what those guys go to school for. And I take them at heart, that's what the man told me. So when it gets to this whole point, my deal was, I'm not going to phony this up. I'm not going to phony this deal up and show you that we didn't kill that hen. I'm also going to show you the days we killed five drakes. How about all those hundreds of days we did that on the film? And but I got beat up over 4 days of shooting hens or something, you know. So, but for the viewers out there, there's the reason. Yeah, you know, it was a twofold deal, you know. So anyway.
Well, Jeff, with building a business and to build one as successful as you built, the thing that I've learned is you fail a lot. It's just whether or not you can overcome those failures to make it a success. What was some of those failures during those business high point to get to that high point in business?
You know, you look back and you say, what could I have changed? What could I have done different? Whatever, you know. I mean, what I should have done. See, I come out of an industry, a construction industry, where I was a general foreman, superintendent, and all this here. I just come off of a deal like that. And when you've got that, done that for so many years, it's hard to take orders. You know what I'm saying? And to get to that level, you got to be headstrong to start with. So, good or bad, that's just the way that you end up. So if I had done it over, I would have probably listened to more guys like Lee, asked more advice from somebody like that, you know, searched out somebody that was a little better. My biggest downfall, my whole business thing, was I should have had somebody that was business-minded, done to college, done business-minded, and had them guiding me in the business thing, you know. Tim Brown, him and I are the same way on that, you know. We both could sell the heck out of things, but we didn't know what to do with the other end of it, you know. We needed somebody taking care of that. Now, when my daughter, Lisa, when she was with me for all this year, you know, she is an accounting and all that there. I was great. She took care of all that. I mean, she was on me constantly because I made every dumb move or what. But that was my biggest failure right there. I should have had somebody behind me hired, saying do this, do this, do this, in the business wise, you know. And I didn't. I made a lot of bad moves in that, you know, in that way. My highlights was marketing, you know. It was a marketing part, you know. And then I figured out the filming thing, you know, how we wanted to film. So that was probably the highlights of it. And we, you know, when I built the Goose Call and all that, I wanted something to blow in my, and the highlight of that was, at the time, any Goose Call that you blew, most duck calls, was so dang hard to blow, most people couldn't blow them. Now, and he was talking about the north-south thing. You take a duck call and you go north with it, and you're going to have to sit there at that booth and teach at the time, not so much anymore, because these guys, mm-hmm. boys are all, it's crazy how it's evolved. But now they'll just pick one up and blow it. So if I went up there, I'd have to tune a duck call where it was super, super easy. And when I brought it down to Arkansas at the World deal down there, or Memphis or whatever, you better retune everything, because they squeal it one time and they're walking away. You know, so you had to market the different things. And the Goose Call-wise, you had to make that nobody at the time was blowing short reads, and the ones that were, you couldn't hardly make a note on. So I made mine so easy to blow, it was unbelievable. So if I could get that guy to make a cluck on that Goose Call, he's buying it. And I wanted him to be successful with it, you know. So, and still to this day we do that, you know, so they're super easy to blow. So that was probably the highlights of it. But, yeah, I mean, you talk about looking back and things you did wrong, yeah. Yeah, I mean, there was a guy falls and makes a lot of mistakes. But when you do get, you know, and you get on top, you know, and you get up there, most anything you make sells, you know. And I made a lot of things that didn't sell good, you know. I mean, at the time, it didn't matter. You just come out with something. And what I would do was I would always say create your demand. So I would build a call. A prototype that looked terrible. And I'd blow that thing two or three times, maybe blow in a video, and then I wouldn't make it available for 3 months. And so you created that demand, and then when you got them, boom, they were sold. Yeah. And a lot of the reason why I just wasn't ready, I created it before I should have, you know. But I learned by doing that, you know. I thought, heck, this worked, I'm going to do it again, you know. So there was a lot of, you know, that was a lot. Like I said, a lot of this was marketing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But the bottom line, we talked before, you know, about is like the video things. If they people see success in the video, and whether they like the video or not, and you're bringing them in, or right in your face, you're killing them, and all this here, they're going to buy whatever you're using. You know, they're going to want what you're using, and why not? It's worked. They just watched it work. You know, and I think we're all like that to a point. You know, I mean, that's just marketing of anything. You know, so.
Hey, Jeff, I want to ask you this. You're a Christian now. You're a changed man.
Yes, mm-hmm.
I am too. You know, we look back and we see our faults big time
mm-hmm.
in life.
Mm-hmm.
Could you say, or would you say, looking back on that period of time, that pride was your biggest fault?
Oh, yeah, that. And pride being this. A lot of people think your ego does get big. I'll say that. But the biggest part of that is, you know, when your ego or your pride looks bad, a lot of times it's because you're so busy you can't turn around. And what I mean by that is if there's 25 customers in front of you and you're talking to three more and there's six phone calls going to your ear, it looks like you're an ego maniac. You won't talk to them, you won't talk to this. You're just out of time. There ain't enough of you. You wish there was 10 more of you. And so that looks a lot of it, but it's the pride, yeah, I mean, and once I got, and I'm skipping way ahead here, but once I got to the point, that, you know, when you get to that point where you're sitting on top of it, you know, and I'll be honest with you, you know, we made a lot of money, you know. I never knew what $1 million was. I was making it every year. It was crazy. You know, it's nuts. So when you get to that point right there, this is a terrible thing to say, but it's the truth. I didn't need anybody. I had everything I wanted. I didn't need Jesus Christ. I didn't need any of that. You know, I grew up a Catholic. I was an altar boy. I did all that. I went to confession. I could do all that. I knelt and all the, you know, and all that stuff. All my family's nothing against that. Don't get me wrong. I'm just saying I did go through that. But at that point, I didn't have to go to church. What am I going to pray for? I had everything. You know what I'm saying? But I didn't get it. You know, I just didn't get it. But I tell you what the good Lord will do. He'll bring you down to your knees and he'll show you who's boss real fast. And he did that.
Amen.
He let me know real fast. And so... It's a whole new world now. And like I said earlier, you know, I was there's a lot of that time like that. You had it all, but you weren't happy. You tried to buy happiness and whatever, and you couldn't do it, you know. And the reason is if you don't have Jesus Christ in your life, it ain't gonna happen. So you're not gonna be totally happy. So,
well, let me say this: when you're doing all the traveling and all, Jeff. You're traveling not just all over North America to hunt and video and all. You going to Argentina, different places, Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
You're exposed to a whole lot of folks hunting. I mean, when you get out there hunting like that, people are watching you. People are paying attention.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I never did it quite at the level you did, but I can remember scrutiny that I never experienced before or since. And I can only imagine with what you were doing, how many people were really paying attention. Did you ever have any issues or run-ins or tickets with game wardens?
No, I never had one. I didn't have one. Never had one. The whole time we were gone, you know, we were traveling and all that, you know. And Bill, you know, as being out there, the one thing you can't, I mean, you've got a sponsor on every sticker, on every inch of your truck, trailer, whatever, if some sponsor, you know, you got one of their stickers on there. So you got a lot of sponsors and a lot of eyes watching it. Your biggest scrutiny is probably those people. But yeah, so that draws attention to the wardens and everything. And we weren't doing anything wrong. You know, I mean, we couldn't. You absolutely couldn't, you know. And at the Duck Club, we were at the Duck Club and all that, you know how that is. If you're running pay hunters, which I have most of my life, the key is to get them killed out, not to get them killed out and let them kill more. You want tomorrow's hunter to kill them. They don't pay you for the hunt. Why would you want to, you know, you're wanting to get them out, you know, and you're hoping they leave early. So
right.
Anyway, so no, they didn't. And we were like, you know, like you said, we were high profile. We weren't like we were hiding, you know, sneaking around a corner trying to kill something, you know. Wasn't like we were doing that. So, yeah, we were out there. And so did we get checked? I can tell you most all of them, you know. Most of the time we filmed it. Most of the time it was on film. You know, a lot of my film show, game wardens coming up. You know, I remember some come out in Colorado and walked out to the pit out there and checked us, some lady. We put her on film, you know. There's one from up here come out. And we never got any tickets, you know, and they'd stop at the club, my duck club. I think we were checked 6-7 times. And a lot of that reason was because Illinois used to have a thing, a punch card. Well, if you killed you could kill 2 geese, but when you killed them, you had to punch a card. And so what they were trying to do was trying to figure out, so if they walked up and is a goose laying there, and you didn't have your card punched, it's another ticket to go right, you know. So we were sticklers about punching that card, you know. So I had some come out and check us, watch us kill geese, see if we could use the card, and then lay down on top of the roof, you know, while we're calling another bunch of them, watch us get the next one, you know, hide yourself, you know. So did I have arguments with them? Yeah, I had arguments with several of them over different things, you know. Mostly one of them, but he was kind of trying to put a feather in his hat with us, I think. But Anyway, yeah, I mean, we got checked sometime. And like Canada, you know, you go in Canada, I swear to God, we got checked in Canada. I can only remember one time in Canada, once. All those years, all those thousands of ducks and geese, one time. And, Bill, you've been up there, you know, and Rocky, I'm not sure if you have or what you've been, but if anybody's been to Canada, there's no place to hide if you're hunting.
No.
I mean, you're in a section that you can see a truck across the other section, you know. It's not like you're hiding from anybody or you're hidden behind a hill and you're trying to sneak away. There is no sneaking away. Anybody wants to see you can go see you because it's flat ground. They can see you for miles. It's basically Saskatchewan. So, yeah, that was one of the parts when this was all over, and we'll talk about it later, one of the parts later, you know, I got a kick out of one of the federal agents, you know, that was – he wrote a big deal in a Game Warden magazine about how they were watching me for years. Well, I'm going to tell you what, the best Houdinis I ever seen, because I never saw them. And why didn't you come check me? If you're watching me for years, you waste a lot of people's money. But all I know, they were hitting pretty good if they did, because nobody come around us. And I knew every section I was in, you know, after all those years. But so did we know? I mean, I know they were watching us and whatever, but no, they never, you know, never checked.
Hey,
you know,
Jim, you bring up Canada mm-hmm. yourself, okay? Because I know this is a part of the story. You were in Canada. You received mm-hmm. a phone call.
Well, I was in Canada, and we just got up there. We hadn't been up there very long. We was in Alberta. And what I did in Canada, I mean, anybody who's been to Canada, tell you, your biggest waste of time is you have to scout every day. So years ago, I found an outfitter up there, Alberta Trophy Hunts, and the way I found him, Cabela's had called me, and I was doing a lot of filming for Cabela's, and they called me and said, hey, we got a new outfitter up here, we want you to go to it. So we did, found the outfitter. Anyway, him and I became friends, and I filmed up there for 9 years at his place. And all I asked that man to do is, you know, to find the geese for me and all this. So anyway, that's where we were at. We were in Alberta. So he ran hunters, two parties of hunters every day. And most of them were people that either saw my videos or people of mine that I had contacted me. Yeah, we want to hunt with you. Well, I'd call up Alberta Trophy Hunts, we'll go with it. Now, I wasn't guiding, so I wasn't worried about that because that's what I did not want to do. But so in Canada, American can't guide without work permits and all that. So that's not what I wanted to do anyway. I just wanted to film. So what we would do as a guide can be like a deer guide up there. A guide can go out, help you set up your decoys and stuff, and be in the general area. Like he can be out scouting while you're hunting. He comes back and helps you pick up stuff. That's your guide. So I'm the one that called the shots and did all that. So we're up there, and the guy was Stan Reiser with the Alberta Trophy Hunts. He was biggest sticker on you know, do you know, make sure you count your limits and you know and all this, and I think I mean he's got that on video where he's counting before. But anyway, long story short, a very, very good friend of mine, guy with a lot of money, gave me a phone call from Nebraska. And I knew who he was when I picked up the phone. I said, hey, what's up, man? And he said, he goes, I said, are you coming up here? Because usually he came up there a lot. And he would fly up and he hunted with me all the time. And he was just down home, hillbilly, wanting to kill him. I helped him design pits. He put pits in for my camera guy in Nebraska, did everything. Unbelievable, great guy. This guy is a super guy. So anyway, I said, you want to come up there? No. He said, I can't. I'm too busy. He said, I'd love to. Maybe in a month I'll come up there. Because I'd stay for 50 days. He said, but no, I had to call you and tell you. He said, poker game last night, he said, with some guys. And a lot of, you know, there's one of the highest profile federal agents from Iowa is usually in this deal. And all he does is high profile guys. And he's an undercover guy. And he goes, we had a few drinks and whatever, blah, blah, blah. And he's kind of telling the story. I can't remember every exact word. But anyway, he just said that.
Jeff, that is a great stopping point going leading into next week.
Okay. There you go. Okay. All right.
I think that is a great place to stop because we're about out of time anyway.
Yeah, it works for me. The good part is I won't forget it. I won't forget where we stopped at that point, believe me.
You know, we covered a lot more ground today than I thought we would.
Yeah, right? everybody wants to know the behind the scenes part. What happens behind the scenes?
You know, I was going to say this when I asked you your question just a minute ago, Jeff, but you know, the Bible talks about pride cometh before a downfall, and in some translations before destruction.
Mhm. Exactly. Yeah.
We are written. If you're not into this podcast and this is the first episode you've heard, go back and listen to other three, but you are about to get the ribeye steak.
Getting close, isn't it?
The Wagyu. Isn't the Japanese steak called the Wagyu? Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
Wagyu beef.
You're going to have several Wagyus to get through the whole rest of it. One session won't get it.
Jeff, thank you again for sharing this story to the listeners. Bill, thank you for being here to help co-host it. I really appreciate that. I want to thank all of you that listened to this edition of the End of the Line podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com.